Keep it alive, through these lines I write. I keep it live, cause I thrive. I might just blow your mind tonight. I'm so hyped, but it's no hype. From this height, it's direct hits on sight. I'm your type, lend me your ears to show you that there's something in me. I'm not giving up, I'm standing right here, holding these days hostage, and I'll make this my year. We turning fear into love, and the love's in the air. I love doing this, cause nothing compares, nothing can share that same type of feeling when you're feeling them flares. They can't catch it, it's havoc. I rip to a tear, switch the scenario on stereos, I leave them impaired. Variables start to change, and they're all in my range. I just gotta grab it, it's all mathematics. Every step is drastic, I make it fantastic. I'm trying to take your breath away, asthmatic.
This is live through the stereo. Go and let it blow, blow through the stereo. I'ma let them know, no through the stereo. Yo, here we go, go through the stereo, stereo. This is live through the stereo. Go and let it blow, blow through the stereo. I'ma let them know, no through the stereo. Yo, here we go, go through the stereo, stereo.
Yeah, just nod your head with it. So explicit and vivid. Every image is intricate, intimate. I put my all into it. No scrimmage and no rules. I'm a pro tool. Hear my heartbeat beat into the vocals. I'm so loco, lost my mind. Oh no, it's ponderoso, dope so. No overdose, cause it's dope, yo. Man, this is house grown, mixed with some milestones. So I let the style flow down like the Dow Jones. Bringing it with some foul tones, letting the crowd know. We getting loud, so it's eardrum rudiments. Yeah, we bring it rude again. Move, little hooligan. Music for tuning in. Full time to the 10. I'm on my clock, like I told you. I'm doing this for dreams we pursue.
Hey, everybody. Welcome back to the Anti-Media Radio. Once again, with your host, Nick Burnaby, here on UCY.TV. I want to thank you guys all for tuning in and listening to our show tonight. I know there's some football going on and whatnot, you know. So it's nice that you're spending your time with us instead of doing that. Or maybe you're doing both. I mean, who knows? Make sure you guys check out everyone here on UCY. Check out our site, theantimedia.org, for the latest anti-establishment updates and all that good stuff. I'm joined in the studio here with SM Gibson, a team member with us here at the Anti-Media. DB's sitting the night out. How are you doing tonight, man?
Doing pretty good, man. How are you doing?
Not too bad. Just sitting here watching this, you know, war propaganda falling all over the place. And I mean, the scare tactics are at like an all-time high, it seems like. I mean, the thing is, and we talked about this earlier today, is that they tried these scare tactics about a year ago on us in Syria before, and now they're trying to pull the same stuff on us again.
Well, I don't think it's quite as bad this time as it was a year ago. I mean, it appeared that we were all going to war, and you know, a country of very apathetic people actually got worked up and said, no, we shouldn't do this. And now it looks like, because they released a couple of videos that could have been made in a Hollywood studio for all we know, everybody's ready to go to war again. And, you know, they want to sell us the propaganda, but, you know, people don't care anymore because it's more of a subtle thing. You may or may not have seen a graphic action, so people are ready to kill.
Yeah, and that's the thing, is that they started pulling on our heartstrings with these journalists, you know. So with these beheadings, they made it a lot more personal to people, and that's obviously the propaganda tactic that they figured out that they had to take. Last time they tried to make it about Assad and all this stuff. We see what happened with Libya and when we overthrow dictators and stuff. Yeah, dictators are awful people. But at the same time, the U.S. government has committed just as many atrocities, as, if not more, than any other regime that's out there. So we don't deserve or have a place at this point in time in the world system to be sitting there and telling people where to go morally or how to do things from a moral standpoint. What not to do, what to do. Because we're sitting here getting ready to go full-blown back into Iraq, right? Because ISIS has killed... How many people have ISIS killed? 5,000, 10,000 people?
I mean,
maybe.
Yeah,
okay?
1,000, yeah.
So ISIS has killed 5,000, 10,000 people in the past year in Iraq. But we're forgetting how many people the U.S. government killed in Iraq prior to overthrowing Saddam Hussein in 2003. during the time between the first Gulf War and then Operation Iraqi Freedom, Americans are responsible for the deaths of hundreds of thousands of Iraqis. We're talking about 500,000. Some estimates put it up to 1 million people that were responsible.
They absolve themselves from that because they say, well, they deserve sanctions. We implemented sanctions. It's Saddam Hussein's fault for not feeding his people. That was the argument. That's what they say. But it's all just to take the spotlight off of the guilty party, as usual.
Yeah, I mean, it was all swept under the rug as soon as it was decided that Saddam Hussein was the boogeyman. And if people are having a short memory here, if you think back during right after 9/11, right, what did they do to trick us into going into the Iraq War? Exactly what they're doing this time around, and they're just playing us for fools. And everybody, not everybody, I hate to say everybody because obviously we're not buying into it, and probably a lot of people on the show that are listening tonight aren't buying into it. But a lot of people are buying into this crap, which from the very outset of what's going on here was based on a bullshit lie, right? And a good amount of people, I saw a poll the other day that was taken by one of these TV news outlets. And so you got to understand that poll is probably highly skewed because all of their respondents were through landline. So that tells you that most of the people that answered this poll were probably over 40, probably over 50, because most people that watch television news are about 55 years old, 60 years old. That's the median age of people that watch that kind of crap now. So you got to remember that these are the highly indoctrinated, highly spoon-fed information people. Anybody under 40, I think, is going to be much more likely to question starting up another war in the Middle East. So that's why I'm not worried about this poll that came out. And to me, it's like, wow, 60% of people think it's a good idea to go into Syria. Well, it was just last year that 60% of people thought it was a bad idea. You know, so they're trying to make it seem like the times have changed. But here's the thing. Back in the beginning, these people that were watching TV regarding the Syria thing, they were just as ready to go to war then as they are now. It's just that people that were not buying into it weren't as vocal, so they weren't able to build this coalition and this kind of vocal opposition to the war. And that's what we're lacking this time around. I think that's where we need to improve our game.
I absolutely agree with you. I think a lot of the reason, at the end of the day, we got out of the war with Syria last August was probably because the Rand Pauls and the Justin Amashes are around, and so people are kind of buying into some sort of libertarianism this week. And, you know, we all know once Jeb Bush is elected next time, it'll go out the window, but they hate Obama so much, and they said Obama's going to drag us into this war, these conservatives. And so they just were against the war all of a sudden. These are the exact same people that wanted us to go into Iraq both times we did. The second time we get bombed, you know, planes going into buildings from a bunch of Saudi Arabians, so that means we need to attack Iraq. And these are the same people that were out for blood in these places. And then, because Obama wanted to do it last time, no, we can't do that. But yet here we are again. They played these people against themselves by saying there's Christians being killed by the thousands. Oh, well, we should bomb these people. And then it turns into, well, here's a graphic, quote-unquote, image of somebody being beheaded. That offends you, doesn't it? We should go kill these people because they're bad. That's what they're trying to sell to us. And it's always rhetoric. It's always fake. It's always phony. They told us if we didn't go into Syria last August, they told us that there's going to be terrorism around the country. Everything's going to fall apart. It's going to fall to these people. Well, Assad's still in power. We haven't been attacked by anything. It's been complete fear-mongering, and it's complete lies. And it's a really sad state of affair that anybody is still believing any of this.
And just think about this. If the warmongers had been successful a year ago and they put us into Syria and we took out Assad, then what? ISIS would have had an entire country at its fingertips. It wouldn't have just had.
It would have two countries.
An area.
At its fingertips.
I mean, it would be completely. ISIS would have been highly in charge of the new government that went up in Syria. You know what I'm saying?
Absolutely.
Just like in Ukraine, how there's neo-Nazis that are highly influential within the new Ukrainian government. I mean, these guys don't care about what ends up happening. All they care about is regime change and military-industrial complex. That's it.
That's all that it's about. I mean, it's a business. And ultimately, to stay in business, you have to create business that, you know, falls into a lot of things we talk about. From the health industry to war, you have to create business. You know, no matter what you do, if you sell ice cream, you want people to get hot and come in there and buy ice cream. And it just so happens that this business is killing people. And the more fear you drum up, the more money Lockheed Martin makes.
And here's the thing, man, is these two videos, right, these two beheading videos, which have been used basically as the tools to garner support for the actions that we're getting ready to take in Iraq and Syria. And I saw reports that said this is a three-year plan, right? So we're talking about three more years of bombing and most likely counterinsurgency, which is basically the toughest form of war. Counterinsurgency is almost impossible to win. Because you're dealing with organic fighters. You know, you're not dealing with mercenaries. You're not dealing with the guys that are doing it to get paid. These are ideological fighters, man. So you're not going to be able to really beat them. There's no way to beat them. Look at Afghanistan. The Talibani dudes are still there. And as soon as we pull out of Afghanistan, guess who's coming back to power? In fact, guess who's getting partial governance right now, even while we're still in charge of Afghanistan? The Taliban is. There's concessions being made between the Afghani government and the Taliban. They understand how powerful they are, how well organized they are, how organic they are. You know, and we can't forget that if we go all the way back, I mean, even the Taliban was created by, given a helping hand by the CIA and all these covert operations and stuff, you know. So we're talking about layer upon layer upon layer of bad foreign policy decisions made by the United States. And I don't care whether ISIS is CIA created, whether they're actually organic, whether they're controlled or not. The fact of the matter is, either way, we've been implementing horrible, horrible foreign policy for decades upon decades, especially in the Middle East, let alone in our own backyard here in Mexico, South America, Latin America. I mean, we've overthrown countries down in South America just as much as we've done in the Middle East. But the Middle East has turned out much worse, because these people are at odds with us ideologically. Think about people in South America. They're indoctrinated by the church, by the Catholic Church. And so that gives them an easy way to control people, right? And that's the same reason why the Romans adopted and made their own version of Christianity, was to control people. So that's a whole different story. In the Middle East, it's different because there's an ideological organic resistance, right, by the Sunni Muslims that are more conservative. They want to keep everything the old way. They don't want to have the new Western style of life and the capitalism and the consumerism. They don't want that stuff, right? So they're going to fight us to the death to preserve that or to keep that out, right? So what we've been doing for the longest time is, because those kind of regimes have trouble gaining massive amounts of power and influence because they're so extreme. You know, Saudi Arabia is one of the few countries, big ones, that is able to get away with that, and that's partially also because of our backing and because of us propping them up and us doing so much business with them with the oil and all that stuff. So historically, it's been tough to get a group like ISIS to be able to control a big country for a long time just because they're so radical. All right, we have a caller calling in. Hey, how's it going? You're on the anti-media.
it's still our own doing. And it's, you have to learn from your mistakes and from history. And it's funny because they play that card to us all the time, whether it's with racism, because an owner of a basketball team makes a comment and that just automatically will remember history. You know, next thing you know, he's going to, you know, have slaves at his house. Or you look at Hitler. The first time anybody opens their mouth, Middle East, remember what Hitler did, we should go over here. It's our business. We care about these people. But they ignore the history that they might not necessarily want you remembering, because it reminds you that, oh, we've already done this before. We're just going to play the same cards again, and you're too stupid to remember.
Yeah, man, and it goes back to the point that we made at the beginning, is that we don't really have the moral authority to be going into countries and telling them that you're doing it wrong, even no matter how barbaric these a-holes get. Us going in there to fight against ISIS, and this is completely telling for me, and I want to talk about with these videos. If we go in there, all we're going to be doing is doing these guys a favor. That's all we're going to be doing. A few of them might have to die, but ideologically and recruit-wise, we're doing them a favor. And we're doing ourselves a disservice because we're going to lose lives, a bunch of money, and nothing is going to end up getting fixed.
You're 1,000% right. I mean, it's like you even explaining the situation, I'm just sitting here like, I don't really believe that, because I think ultimately they're going to just prolong some sort of military action as long as they can. There is no end in sight. There will never be an end in sight. It's always going to be, quote-unquote, again, unstable. That's the cycle of the business. We keep the region unstable. We keep troops present. We keep bringing the money through. I mean, they built a embassy in Baghdad that is bigger than the Fortress of Solitude itself. And they're trying to tell us, oh yeah, we plan to leave in Iraq eventually. They've had thousands upon thousands of advisors in Iraq since we left Iraq. We don't have troops there, but we have advisors in uniforms. We never left Iraq. There was never a plan to leave Iraq, even with Mr. Nobel Prize winner himself. That was done to save face. They never left.
Yeah, I did an article. All right, we got a call coming in now. Hey, how's it going? You're on the anti-media.
Hey, this is Jess. I was just going to comment on ISIS.
Sure, man. What do you want to say?
I was just going to agree with something that was said about the war on terror being an endless cycle, which is, I thought it was true, because it is a nebulous, it is an endless cycle, and I think we want, the government wants it that way, because when it they want instability, because that gives them a pretense to intervene, you know, a scapegoat. And I think when we look at the war on terror, it's going to be like that. It's going to be an infinite cycle, because every time we intervene into a foreign country, there's always more dissent. And from that, for every attack, I read somewhere, for every drone attack that's committed on an insurgent group, that's more militias form. In defense to protect himself, because we're attacking foreign nation in the process, and there's always going to be casualties. So the war on terror is pretty nebulous. It's a nebulous threat, and yeah, like you said, it's an endless cycle, which is really true.
Yeah, man, and how much does it have to cost us before we finally learn from it? I mean, it was like a year ago, it was like everybody realized, okay, yeah, this is a bad idea. You know, and now it's like, oh, there's a couple beheading videos, and there's a couple of Christians trapped on a mountain, and all of a sudden everyone's like, oh yeah, let's do it. You know, all the people that are on TV every day that are watching this news, where every single thing that I've seen on TV, because I turn on the TV in the morning just so I can get an idea about what about the propaganda these guys are pushing out. Every single channel is pushing out this pro-war propaganda right now, and I'm talking MSNBC, CNN, Fox News, all of these guys. They're not questioning a single phrase. And in fact, one guy from the AP, there was a video the other day that was released by RT, but it was just a YouTube video of a press conference at the White House. And a guy from the AP was actually holding like a dissenting view on Ukraine and asking like a dissenting type of question, you know, kind of calling into question the policy that they're doing right now with the with NATO and the aggressions that they're committing towards Russia and the posturing and all that stuff. I mean, yeah. This guy was reamed by this woman that was she was like the press secretary or whatever. She literally reamed this guy and was like basically saying, why in the hell are you asking any kind of question that even remotely goes against the mainstream talking point? She was like literally like just totally tearing this guy down. It was amazing to watch. But I think it's kind of symbolic of what we see going on right now with all this propaganda. Despite all this history and this war on terror being a complete failure, where Iraq is basically worse off now than it was in even like back in the early 90s, it's a lot worse off now than it was in 2001. And Afghanistan is looking like it's basically going to fall right back into the hands of the Taliban and all that stuff. But for these people to be able to convince everybody, I mean, it's some pretty effective propaganda. And like SM was saying earlier in the show, it's the rhetoric. They keep on playing it over and over again and again and again. And then eventually everyone that's stuck on the mainstream television stuff, they're all for it all of a sudden, man. It's like everybody's like, ah, maybe it is a good idea. We got to stop these guys. They killed Christians. They had people trapped on a mountain. We got to stop them. I mean, this is what people are thinking right now.
Yeah, it is a problem because we're falling for the same old tricks. They're using the same prop us up into foreign intervention, and they're just trying to legitimize U.S. stance as becoming an international police, and that's going to have a lot of consequences in the future, because every country we touch just combusts and gets worse, turns into flame. I think they want it that way. They like instability because instability helps bring power to the institution to our government right now. For whenever there's a crisis, there's always centralization of power, and in the media there's always going to be misinformation too. I think they want the public to be ignorant. You know, because when the public's ignorant, they're susceptible to these cues, to manipulation, and that's the problem. And the first steps to fix that is education. And I think alternative media, education, and like what you do is pretty much like the stepping stone towards change. Because that's the start of the problem, ignorance.
Yeah, man, I agree. We actually, one of our new writers, Aaron Nelson, from the Pontiac Tribune, he started writing for us this last week, and he put an article out on the anti-media about getting college education for free online. And I think it's pretty legit. You can take a bunch of classes from like pretty well-renowned universities and stuff, and you take it on your own time. You're not dealing with the classroom atmosphere where it's programming and where it can turn into propaganda if you have a certain teacher or whatever. It's all information on your own time, and you get to selectively, you know, choose what you want to learn about and stuff like that. You know, and so I agree with you for sure. Education is the key to getting through all this stuff, because right now, in the current state of affairs that I think the country is in, yeah, there's a lot of people that get stuff. They understand that the Federal Reserve is behind much of our issues. The foreign policy is completely flawed. But everyone is so loosely kind of connected. And you know, I got a bunch of friends that are progressives that are against the war. I got a bunch of friends that are libertarians that are against the war. I got a bunch of friends that are anarchists that are against the war. And even people that are Tea Party that are against the war. But it's such a loose coalition that it's really hard to kind of coalesce around any certain ideas. So I think... The most effective thing that we can do right now as just American people that want to see the way of life go in the right direction is just through education and spreading these ideas around and kind of putting them into use, I think is one of the big things that we need to work on a bit more. And I'm seeing all these awesome projects like the Food is Free project and stuff out of Austin, Texas, where, I mean, these people are literally planting food all over the place for free. And anyone that comes around can kind of pick up food and just eat food and share food and all this stuff. I mean, these are the ideas that not only do we need to spread, we need to practice them so that way people can see that they work and that they're good ideas. I think we have another caller that just joined the group here. Someone from 818 area code. How you doing?
Hey, how you doing? This is Manny from Occupy Los Angeles. I like your show a lot because, you know, you basically are bringing the things that people should be talking about. Like, you know, like being from Mexico myself, I see what the CIA has done to our country. And then I come to the United States and I see that wars are big businesses. But people here are kind of asleep in a lot of ways because they think, oh, we're helping all these countries. No, we're protecting our interests in other countries, because if we really were helping other countries, how come we're not helping the Sudan? Because there's nothing for us to benefit over there. We destroy other countries, and then we rebuild them ourselves, and all these people like Cheney and so on are making big profits and stuff like that, you know? So it's kind of really sad, you know?
Yeah, exactly, man. It's a foreign policy that in words and like what you see on the news, it's all about humanitarian stuff. And the reason why we overthrew Gaddafi was because, you know, he was murdering his own people. And the first time when we went into Kuwait and then into Iraq and all that stuff, it was because they were throwing babies out of incubators and all that stuff.
But that all ended up not being true.
And all of that stuff ended up being a lie, you know. And so that's what these guys do is instead of actually going out on these humanitarian missions, and like you were saying with the Sudan, they just act like they're going into Iraq because they want to save people. They act like they're going into Libya because they want to help people. If they wanted to help people, they would go invade Israel and stop them from bombing Gaza. I mean, let's get real with stuff. You know, so, I mean, these guys are completely, they got so many people duped. And what's great now is that there's more and more people that aren't duped because they get their information from the internet. They're not spoon-fed all this information where they're able to consume a bunch of propaganda and all that stuff. So I think that is where, and that is why now is the time where I think we have the ability to try to really shake things up. If anything, all we got to do is shake things up. We may not be able to fix everything right now, but I think in 20 years, it's a reasonable goal to be able to fix everything. But I mean, right now, all we can do in one way or another, whether people decide to do it by voting or whether they decide to do it not by voting, whether they decide to do it by protesting or like we were just talking about planting this free food everywhere and stuff like that. I mean, all we can do is make disruptions and hope to make something better out of every disruption we make. And sooner or later, if there's enough disruptions, it'll all fire together like an engine coming alive for the first time, and it'll be like a internet connection almost that connects everybody. Okay. And sooner or later, in 20 years from now, I mean, that could all be a possibility. Who knows?
Exactly. Right now, like in L.A., we feel like it's a war zone. It's like we're fighting the cops now. You know, it's like, wow, it's just amazing. It just really reminds me of being back in Mexico, if you know what I'm saying, you know?
Yeah, I've been seeing a lot of stuff. We have a correspondent out in L.A., Alyssa Calkins. I don't know if you know her. She writes with us at the Anti-Media and covers news for us out of L.A., and also Patty Beers, the live streamer. We've been seeing a lot of police violence coming out of Los Angeles, like with Azelle Ford and a bunch of other people that we can't even name. But I mean, it's also, I think, a symptom of the larger issue that we're facing as a country with this whole police militarization stuff. And sooner or later, you know, like you were saying, maybe this can be one of the first issues that we really take charge of and battle it back, because with all this momentum that was built from Ferguson, I mean, Ferguson was a horrible tragedy, but we have to keep in mind that it has built a big constituency that's ready to talk about the police state and talk about the militarization.
But what's sad is, and I'd like to ask you this question to our caller, is being in L.A., you've probably seen similar militarization of the police that was in Ferguson. yourself in your own town. It just wasn't reported to the level until it was in middle America.
Well, exactly. It's actually, it's like you guys, that's why I love your show, because you talk about something that other shows don't talk about, obviously. And like PM Beers, for instance, she's out there live streaming. One of the things that nobody has talked about in a long time, and that's why sometimes, you know, when these issues come up, I take advantage of telling people, I cannot believe that there's border checkpoints. Like, there's a border checkpoint on the 15, there's one in Sacramento. Border patrol checkpoints, and I think those are unconstitutional because they're way past the border already. I mean, like, way past the border. And if you came to visit us in L.A. and you happen to go to San Diego, you know how sad it is if coming back, they might ask you for your passport? Why should you be presenting your passport when you only went to San Diego and you're trying to come back to L.A.? You know what I'm saying.
Yeah, man, I've actually had an experience up there at the checkpoint that's there between San Diego and Orange County, which I think is the one you're talking about when you're heading north there.
Exactly.
And there was one time where I was on the way to a meeting in L.A., and I was already pretty behind schedule. I was in a rush, and these guys, they pulled me aside at the, you know, they were waving everybody through at the checkpoint, and they pulled me aside for no reason, probably basically because I was wearing a beanie. And they pulled me aside. And the guy comes up to my window, and he's like, all right, man, I'm going to need to ask you to step outside so that we can search your car. And I told him, I was like, no, man, you're not searching my car. I'm like, I refuse the search. I just want to be on my way. You know, I got somewhere to be, and you're impeding my travel. And so, you know, these guys go off, and like three of them, they talk, and one guy comes to the passenger window, and he begins to basically bully my uncle, who I was with at the time. And I told my uncle to videotape the whole thing, and the guy bullied my uncle to the point where my uncle got so scared that he shut off his camera. And so the cops come back, and they're like, okay, well, we're not going to search your car, but we're going to bring a canine unit out here, and he's going to walk around the outside of your car, and if the canine unit basically signals that there's something in your car, then that gives us the reasonable suspicion or whatever to be able to search your car. And I said, you know, I'm like, you know, do what you got to do, but I got nothing in here, you know. And so they bring the dog out. I'm watching the dog the whole time. I, as far as I could tell, the dog did not signal anything in my car, and I didn't have anything in my car. But the cops still told me. They're like, hey, man, yeah, you got to get out of your car. The dog says that we got to search your car, you know. And I'm just like, wow, this is ridiculous. I get out of the car, and I'm telling the guy, I'm like, man, you know that this checkpoint is illegal. It's unconstitutional. And the cop tried to get very confrontational with me, and it got to the point where he's pointing his finger. He's standing so close to me that I could feel the spit from his talking, like, landing on my damn face. And he's pointing his finger at my chest, and he's, like, telling me, hey, bro, don't tell me how to do my job. I've been doing this for 15 years or whatever. And I'm just like, whoa. And the other cop came up. There was a younger dude that came up, and he actually grabbed the guy and pulled him back. And kind of calmed him down. I'm like, dude, he's telling me to calm down. I'm like, dude, I'm not even panicked right now. I'm not even, I'm upset that you guys are searching my car, but I'm not making any aggressive moves or anything like that. It's like, you're being the aggressor here. And the other guy came up, the younger guy, after he calmed the other guy down and put basically had him leave the situation, the guy came up and he was actually kind of curious. He's like, so hey, man, like, what is it that you read, you know, to find out all this stuff about your rights and all that? And I'm like, dude, have you ever heard of the Constitution? I'm like, just read that in the Bill of Rights. And the guy literally, like, laughed it off. And I was just like, all right, man, like, I'm being serious, though. And anyways, like, these guys proceeded to search my car for about half an hour. I was detained at the checkpoint for a good 45 minutes to an hour. And they made me late to my meeting. And in the end, they didn't find anything. The dog was in my car. Like, they literally put the dog in my back seat. But they criminalized me right away. And I had done nothing wrong besides being a brown guy wearing a beanie crossing through a checkpoint.
That's,
you know, and so they profiled me, and they undermined my rights. Even though I tried to flex my rights and assert my rights, they had a loophole where they can bring the dog out and say, okay, that's probable cause, now we get to search your car. And the dog, I'm telling you, didn't signal anything. So I can imagine living in a place where you're constantly getting pulled over, and at least where I'm at, it's like I'm so close to the freeway that, like, I'm not really driving through the streets that much. I just hop on the freeway and hop back off. But during the weekends at night, man, I mean, there's checkpoints everywhere around here, bro. And you got to be so careful. You got to be, like, it's to the point now where people on Facebook and Twitter, like, post out, oh, there's a checkpoint on this street and that street. It's like, it's that bad, you know. And it's our time now, I think, with this momentum that we got from Ferguson, to challenge this police state at every angle that we can, whether it's through writing, whether it's through cop blocking, whether it's through civil disobedience. Is just keep challenging it, man, and then even encourage people to go to the voting ballot and vote against this stuff.
Well, exactly, and so people like myself from the Occupy, movements and stuff like that, really appreciate your show, and hopefully you'll continue talking about police brutality, immigration issues, and stuff like that. So I really thank you a lot, seriously. Okay.
Thanks, man. Thanks for calling in.
All right. Have a good night.
You too.
So ultimately, what I've gathered from all this is that you're against having true freedom, because I watched this silver-haired man named Sean Hannity on television, and he told me all these wonderful things, and he said basically that you're some crazy anti-American because, you don't want to kill people innocently. And that's crazy to me. Why wouldn't you just want to just go kill people? Because the silver-haired man would never lie to me.
Yeah, man. And it's this propaganda, this rhetoric that they keep on jamming down our throats, down people's throats, not mine, not yours, because we don't watch that crap. But, I do watch it in the mornings just to get an idea of what they're saying. I don't take it as my truth for the day.
It's my gospel.
So people can get a bit immune to that stuff, right? So it's on us now to put a stop to this crap, and we can't let the mainstream media speak for us. We can't let them dictate and say, oh, this is how the American people feel.
But they do that. They've done that for a long time, and they get sourced through different channels, I think that's the correct term, through government influence. Let's not kid ourselves. I mean, the parties run the networks. If anybody doesn't think that NBC is run by the Democratic Party, then I don't tell them Fox is run by the Republican Party. I mean, I'm not telling anybody anything they don't know, but it's all about what can be sold for the benefit of what is perceived as two different parties, but ultimately they're controlled by the same interest. I mean, there's a reason that the same people that funded the Allies in World War II also funded the Axis powers. They were playing both sides, and it's the same thing with the media, it's the same thing with Republican and Democrat. And yet, there's still people that buy into it. There's still people that believe it. The craziest example that I've recently seen is with Israel and Gaza and Netanyahu and the IDF. We hear this story, and there was a 4-year-old child that was killed, I believe, by a rocket that came over from Gaza in Israel. And I started following the IDF Twitter account once all the situation started 70 days ago, I guess, at this point. And they were all, this was 2 weeks ago, so we were at least 50 days into it. And at that point, over, 500 children had died in Gaza that were Palestinian children, and they were mourning the loss of this 4-year-old child in Israel, and that's horrible, horrible. That there's I don't want an Israeli to die, I don't want a child in Gaza to die. But they're just acting like this one 4-year-old child justifies the death of the 500 children that had died before it, and they're using it as propaganda. It was sickening to me.
Yeah, they value one life that's useful to their propaganda much more valuable than 500 lives that aren't useful to their propaganda. Now, would it be useful for the U.S. media to truthfully report on what the situation was going on in Gaza? No, because the U.S. media...
But you have to ask yourself why.
Well, here's why. Because the U.S. media, and it's obvious from their reporting, that they are deeply in bed with the military-industrial complex. And not only that, they're deeply in bed with the government. And we see that with these other stories that we're gonna talk about in a few minutes. And I actually might as well jump into it right now. For one, a prominent reporter with the LA Times was caught due to Freedom of Information Act release, basically proofing all of his articles that were covering the CIA and the Pentagon with the CIA and the Pentagon. Basically, this reporter that was at the LA Times, and now he works at the AP, the CIA and the Pentagon are his editors. So basically, this guy was caught putting out pure, unadulterated propaganda that clearly favored the CIA, the Pentagon. There was one email that they reported on pretty prominently, and this is from First Look. This is Glenn Greenwald's organization. They showed that this guy was basically trying to turn all this data from the drone bombings, the drone strikes in Afghanistan, Yemen, all the casualties, the civilians and stuff. He was trying to spin it in a positive way. And there's an exchange of emails between this journalist, quote-unquote journalist, and guys at the Pentagon and guys at the CIA. And they actually have these conversations because of Freedom of Information Act. So, I mean, this is just the guys that work in newspapers. I mean, LA Times, okay, yeah, it's kind of big. It's not as big as the New York Times, but it's pretty big. It's up there. But we're talking about the guys on TV. Sean Hannity, Wolf Blitzer, Chris Matthews, any of these guys from any of these
stations. They all are trustworthy, silver-haired men.
These guys, and it's kind of very, very similar to the portrayal of the news guy in V for Vendetta. I'm sure a lot of people out there listening have seen that. But the guy plays basically the same role that our media guys play. In that they basically just puppet the establishment view. They create a demand for the war on terror. They make everybody scared of themselves. They make everybody into racists. I mean, this is what these guys do. And it benefits them. Why? Because out of chaos becomes order. And that's what our government, this is the philosophy these idiots have been running with for a very long time. And guess what? I'm here to tell you guys right now that it's a flawed philosophy. And anything that has to do with killing people for money is a completely horrible idea. And that tells me that these guys are working with bad ideas, and it's only a matter of time until their ideas are done.
Well, I think ultimately, if you look at the entire situation and break it down for what it is in each individual circumstance, I think you're going to see the same result is everyone always does it for greed. Because, you know, there's a chain that goes, whether you're talking about somebody talking to Sean Hannity, okay, here is your story you're going to read. Maybe Sean Hannity believes that stuff. I have no idea. But what I do know is he gets a huge paycheck every year. So he keeps reading what's put in front of him, whether he believes it or not. And that goes all the way up the line. And you can talk about, you know, the big argument with Iraq, Dick Cheney and all that. Well, they've already got all the money in the world. What, you know, they don't need money. It's not greed with those people. There's a greed of power. And, I think people believe there's this huge conglomeration of people doing everything at once. And, you know, maybe they are. I mean, they do meet at Bilderberg every year. But, ultimately, each individual person's motivation does this out of some sort of greed. Period. And that's what you are, I guess, trying to combat, but how do you combat that?
Yeah, it's this underlying idea, right?
Right.
Where this is, in these guys, in a sick and twisted way, in a sociopathic way, they think they're doing the right thing. You know, and they think they're going to build this superpower that's going to bring the whole world justice and all this stuff. The only flawed part of that idea, you know, the whole centralizing government stuff, is that when you do that, it always ends up being what a few guys think should be. You know, and it's always, and it ends up in every
government. Do you actually think they believe they're killing people, thousands and thousands of people, for moral reasons?
I think they're doing it. I don't know if they think they're doing it for moral reasons, but they think they're doing it for the right reasons. Okay, and I think Hitler, in his mind, he was probably in his mind doing the right thing. Like, he thought that that was what he should have been doing. You know, and when Americans, think about it, when Americans went from the East Coast, from the colonies, and started colonizing westwards, and at that point when we subjugated and committed genocide on the Indian, on the Native Americans, those guys thought they were doing the right thing.
We were
they
had that. Genesis, or
what was it
class.
Called? The, I forget what it's called, something, Manifest Destiny, right?
Right.
Is that what it was
yes.
called? All right. They had this Manifest Destiny thing, and they were they had this idea in their head that the right thing to do was go across these lands, steal them from the people that were existing on those lands, subjugate those people, and turn that stuff into your own. And that's what they did. And they believed it. Most of these people probably believed it. Of course, there was the few percentage of people that were in with those people that traveled westward that realized, holy shit, this is bad what we're doing to these Native American people. And they probably realized, oh, all this demonization that said all these brown people are lesser, that, oh, they're not actually, like, full-on, like, you know, human. We can treat them like shit. You know, they probably realized, oh, that's not right. Because I've made friends with these Native Americans, and these are very genuine.
Figure somebody would have
figured
that.
These are nice people.
Right.
For a large part of the time. Of course there were bad Native Americans.
There's bad everybody.
Indian tribes and Indian Empire. Of course. Everything, it always happened. But, you know, they tricked the majority of people into believing that Manifest Destiny lie. You know, just like they've tricked the majority of people nowadays to believe in the American dream. You know, when this whole American dream thing is a pipe dream.
What's the interconnecting thing between all? Everything we've talked about tonight, it's all because. And for anyone's offended, I believe in God, but they've sold it all through God. It's our destiny to kill these people. It's our destiny to kill these people. What's your destiny? It's what God wants us to do. Does he? Really?
Yeah, and then and then everything with Israel, too, it's all based on the...
It's all based
supposedly
on that.
Based on the Bible and all that stuff.
Right, and it's all a lie.
All right, we have another caller in from 484 area code. How's it going?
Hi, good. How are you?
Pretty good. What do you want to talk about?
I was just calling because I was listening to, they were talking about military procedures and, you know, that they were convinced that, or someone had said that 500 lives aren't worth one American life, and I actually just watched something on C-SPAN 3 where they were actually discussing that, and I just think it's appalling that this whole military conference, they're basically talking about putting boots on the ground without even considering that there hasn't been any presidential or congressional vote on putting boots on the ground. It just seems like they are really gearing up to go into Iraq again without even the authorization.
Well, we haven't gotten prior authorization since World War II, so that's out the window. They're not even going to think about that one.
Yeah, I think, you know, the thing is that, like you were saying, it's almost as if the media has declared war, you know, and the horrible part of this whole equation is that they've done it so many times in the past, and you'd think that everyone would be like, all right, that's enough bullshit. You guys did this to us the first time in Iraq with the whole throwing the babies out of the incubator thing. You did this the second time in Iraq with the whole WMD thing. And now you're doing this a third time in Iraq with the whole ISIS thing. And it's almost like, dude, are we really going to buy into this crap again?
A silver man told me it was so.
And here's the thing. Here's why the media at the current point in time is winning the war of public opinion. Not because people actually believe in this crap, but because they make people believe that people believe in this crap. And that's the thing. Is that they're selling it to us right now as if it's already inevitable, as if it's already about to happen. It's just a matter of settling the final details, which, yes, don't get me wrong, that's probably the point that they're in right now. But they're selling it to the American people as, hey, guys, sorry, it's, you know, it's kind of a done deal. You know, there's not much you can do about it. So they're sowing the seeds of us being apathetic when in reality, at this current point in time, we still do, as a people, possess the power to say, hey, no, we're not going to do this shit anymore.
Last August proved it with Syria.
Right. And I just, it's crazy to me, too, because they even brought up Hamas in this. It just seemed like such a curveball. It didn't even make any sense with what they were, that they would bring that up and started talking about human shields. And it's just complete, I mean, it's just a lie. The more they say it, doesn't make it true. And I just find it so sad that they can look at the pictures of the poor babies that have been slaughtered by the Israeli, you know, IDF, and just try to justify it by keep using this human shield excuse that just is obviously not true.
Yeah, I think you mentioned when you first got on about how the one life is one life that benefits our propaganda is worth much more than 500 lives that don't benefit the propaganda, you know. And the way that the news went about reporting the numbers, like every single time when they would report the death toll out of Israel, if you listen to any corporate show or radio, they would say, "Oh, there's been 1,700 people killed," and then they'd be like, "There's been this many Israelis and then this many Palestinians." They don't come out and say, "Yeah, there's been 1,500 Palestinians already killed and only 50 Israelis." They don't say that. They say there's been 1,550 killed, and then they're like, "Oh yeah, and 50 of them."
Well, when it first started, they literally there were. I think at that point there were 400 Gazans killed and one or two Israelis killed, and they were reporting as 405 people had been killed in the conflict. In the head.
Oh yeah.
Yeah, and we've done so many horrible, horrible things to the Iraqis over all this time. And like we mentioned a bit earlier about how between the Gulf War and the recent conflict in Iraq, our sanctions, our no-fly zone, our embargoes led to the indirect deaths of like 500,000, if not more, Iraqis. And we're talking about 500,000 children, okay? So it's just so insane that now they claim to have this moral authority where they're like, okay, well, ISIS, who I am not going to disagree that ISIS is a horrible, brutish, barbarian organization that is doing horrible things. I'm not disputing that at all. All I'm saying is that I don't think the U.S. has the moral authority to go back into Iraq, and especially not into Syria, to fight these guys when in reality, our government has done much worse, and we've done it all over the world, and it's all been covert. It's all on the books. I mean, the overthrow of the Chilean government is on the books. The overthrow of the Iranian government is on the books. What we did with Saddam Hussein is all on the books. But when the media brings all this crap up, they never mention any of that. All they mention is that ISIS is the biggest threat to your life right now, just like the WMDs were a biggest threat, and just like bin Laden was the biggest threat, and just like Saddam Hussein previous to that was the biggest threat. And I mean, they keep repeating the same crap, and I think sooner or later...
Terrorism.
I think sooner or later we can finally, you know, get through it, and I think that time is coming. But it's just a matter, I think, of us coming together under the right format and having the right, ideology of going about things. And this is where the media, the corporate media, is beating us at the game. And here, this is how they're doing it. They have a sense of preeminence where they basically just say, okay, this
well,
is what's going to happen. This is how it's going to happen. And the American people basically agree with what's about to happen. That's what they do.
Advance.
And so, we need to combat them in the same kind of way where we take over the narrative and we say, no, that isn't how the American people feel. This is how the American people feel. And here is the numbers that back them up. Because all of these polls that these guys release, and I talked about a poll at the beginning of the show here, where basically, according to this poll, I can't remember where it was from. It might have been Wall Street Journal, where they said that 60% of the U.S. public felt that we should attack ISIS. 60% felt that we should go back into Iraq and Syria to attack ISIS. And this is a reversal of the polls from just a year ago.
Well,
but see, the
I have a
polling
question
numbers,
about that, too. Because that's one of Glenn Greenwald's leaks from The Intercept, which you guys were talking about earlier, was that, and I'm not sure if the NSA does this as well, but GCHQ was manipulating polls in order to garner favor, I guess, more with the public to kind of sway their sentiments. And I don't know if the NSA is doing that as well, but I mean, at least with people I speak to, you know, I'm on Twitter, and it just seems like I just don't see that these numbers are real, to be honest. I mean, it just seems like there's some type of manipulation going on, either that or they're polling people that they know are, you know, swayed a certain way.
Absolutely. Like, I think exactly what you're talking about has been going on for a long time. I think it's been going on in official elections. I think it goes in media polls. I think we're about to reach that with the situation in Scotland. I think that they are about to have an election. I think the majority of people in Scotland will vote to become an own independent nation. And I think that the vote will turn out the way that Gore and Bush did in 2000 or Nixon Kennedy did in 60. It's just going to go the other way.
And how convenient that she decides to tell everyone that she's having a baby now.
That is very ironic, I thought.
Yeah.
Unite the United Kingdom with a child.
Yep.
Yeah, I definitely think that manipulation of the numbers are in play. And now the thing about that poll that we mentioned earlier is it was conducted 100% on landlines, which means I don't know how many people do you still know that have landlines? I don't know anybody in my family, even the older people. I mean, literally, my grandma doesn't have a landline anymore because now she has a cell phone.
I don't have a cell phone just because of the Snowden leaks after last year. I have a landline, but they didn't call me. So
yeah, and you're like one of the few exceptions. So literally, most of the people that have landlines at this moment are probably people that are older of age. So we got to remember that these polls are all done with people that are basically baby boomers, and they've been fighting wars their whole lives, and they've never really had to pay for it that much, like the younger generation is about to. We got to remember
Vietnam.
Yeah, they have Vietnam, but we're still paying for Vietnam.
And that's one thing that they actually mentioned in the military, you know, procedures or whatnot on C-SPAN 3. They said he actually had the gall. This was Lieutenant Colonel. Am I allowed to say names or no?
Yeah, go ahead.
Lieutenant Colonel Adcott. And he had said, well, first of all, he said that they have to go in and stack the enemy up like wood, mow them down, stack them up like wood, and I'm saying this verbatim, and that, you know, we didn't lose the Vietnam War and we didn't lose the Iraq War. Yeah. It's just about how the media portrayed it.
They are the media.
And second of all, it's not even... both wars
coming
were started on a lie.
Thank you for calling in. We got to cut you off early. It goes over. Thank you guys for tuning in.
Bye-bye.